Welcome back to the BIM Heroes podcast. This is the fourth hour of the podcast here live at the BIM Coordinator Summit. And we will be discussing what it means to discuss digital twins. Wanted to introduce both of you, Richard and Anand. Can you both introduce where you, what your backgrounds is and what you do?
Fantastic. Shall I go first?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay, so I'm Richard Scott. I've been working within the digital construction industry for almost 25 years. I'm currently Chief Partnership Officer at TwinView, and we are focused on delivering connected digital twins. Just a little bit about my background. I started in digital construction in 1999, so which feels like three lifetimes ago. And I was focused on developing mobile applications using first generation technology, which at the time was Palm Pilot. Successfully developed what was probably the first commercially successful mobile application using a live construction project environment. That business and that product was sold to Trimble in 2014. It's still in operation. It's known as FieldView. So I've been around the digital engineering space for a long time. I've seen BIM evolve from something which was essentially a marketing tool used for fly-throughs of buildings into something that's far more data-centric and intelligent. And I'm really excited for the future of digital engineering, and I think digital twins are going to be a big part of that.
Yeah, and I'm Anand Mecheri. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Invicara. We have been building digital twin technologies for the last 8+ years, and over the last few years, we've been very focused on creating a platform called Twinit. Twinit is now an independent company, and the platform is available for application developers to build whatever solutions, digital twin-enabled solutions that they want to. So my background is in the smart buildings world for a good 30+ years. Built businesses in the area of intelligent building technologies. Sold the group to Siemens. I was part of the global headquarters of Siemens for a couple of years before I founded Invicara.
So just starting out, what is a digital twin? What are we looking at and how is it changing?
Okay. Again, if I kick off. I think my perspective is perhaps a little bit more focused on a particular aspect of the built environment than perhaps Anand's is. You know, if you look at the wiki definition of a digital twin, it's essentially this connection of the digital realm and the natural realm. And it's quite interesting within the build environment, particularly within TwinView. We are entirely focused on buildings and facilities. We come from an architectural background. TwinView was born out of an architect's practice, Space Group. And I think fundamentally, if you think about a digital twin, you know, so much work and effort and development has gone into BIM over the last 20 years. We do a lot of work to understand the characteristics, qualities, and specifications and attributes of a building. It starts at design, it travels in through, it transitions into construction, and BIM is clearly here to stay. But BIM for me is really about what I would call the kind of the static characteristics of that facility or that building. You know, the qualities, the materials, the specifications, the components, the assets that are contained within that. But we don't build buildings to be sort of static empty shells. So as soon as we open up that building and it starts to perform its purpose, it gets flooded with people. We start to consume energy. Air quality starts to change. You know, things start to move. There's a lot of dynamics. For me, a digital twin within the build environment is really tapping into that dynamics, using that static BIM information, using that dynamic operational information, bringing it together to create a data set that's greater than the sum of the parts. And then using that information to just try to understand how we can improve that building, maximize its purpose. So creating a school, that's a great place to learn, or a hospital, that's a great place to get better, or a residential environment, that's a great place to live in. But at the same time, kind of optimizing whatever it is that you're looking to optimize. Very often that's energy, carbon emissions, you know, the efficiencies of the building. So for me, a digital twin is really about this combination, this synergy of static building characteristics and dynamic operational characteristics, which can only be measured using IoT and sensors, and bringing that information to create something that's greater than some of the parts that can allow us to create ultimately an end destination, which is a kind of self-aware, continually commissioning, continually optimizing facility. That's how I see a digital twin, again, within a laser-focused sort of lens of buildings and facilities.
I think Richard described that very, very well, setting out what a digital twin can be in the context of operating a building. So we see the digital twin as a broader landscape, right? Digital twins, to put it very simply, I would describe a digital twin as a vehicle for digital transformation. So any process, any type of asset, that uses data to drive their workflows can be optimized using data in a better way. So digital twins, one way to describe digital twins is it's an environment where you can bring together different, completely different data sets, relating them to one another, creating a knowledge graph of everything that's happening, and using that data to drive analytics, simulations, and present those results in meaningful ways to different stakeholders. So digital twins are ubiquitous. It's a very ubiquitous term. It can mean so many things to so many people. So you could be talking about, firstly, you could be talking about many industry segments. Digital twins are applicable not just to the built environment. It could be applicable to healthcare, to supply chain, to aviation, to manufacturing, to agriculture, to very, very different types of domains where the same principle applies, the digital transforming using data, the process that is driving the business of that particular segment. If you look at the built environment more specifically, there again, there is a lot of variability. So there are so many asset classes within the built environment. You could be talking about buildings, and within buildings, you could be talking about very different types of buildings. And in these buildings, take for example, a healthcare facility. A digital twin is not only about the facilities relating to the healthcare facility. It's also about the operational processes. Same thing with an aviation facility, say an airport terminal. Of course, the maintenance of the airport terminal, the information relating to the assets are critical, but there is a lot more revenue impact coming from optimizing the people flow, optimizing the availability of different services to get people from the curb to the gate as quickly as possible, or from the gate back to the curb as quickly as possible. So there are many aspects to digital twins, even within the built environment. And as we were talking about, the buildings is one segment of it. You could have infrastructure, which could be energy networks, water networks, roads, rail, all sorts of different classes of assets. And it could also be cities. City-scale digital twins can be very broad in nature. It could be dealing with any stage of the development of a city. You could be talking about urban planning simulations for doing a livability assessment. You could be talking about mobility network assessments. You could be talking about flood management. You could be talking about traffic management. So there's several facets to what a digital twin really can be. And typically, you have different stakeholders who are driving it and based on their business models. And I'm sure we'll talk more about that as we go.
Yeah, and that's a good lead into this, is that when is it supposed to start? When does the process of a digital twin start? Is it the beginning in the design, or does it wait until we get to construction?
Mm-hmm. Maybe I'd go first on that again. Being very focused on sort of framing this within the world of kind of AECO and, you know, the area that we are focused on improving. You know, I believe the digital twin, you know, if you look at the REBA stages, the REBA workflow stages, you know, a digital twin essentially starts a concept, you know, and I think what you'll see is the value of the digital twin essentially sort of aggregating and snowballing, you know, as that concept design moves into kind of construction, and then we move into handover and then into operations. And it's quite interesting, I think, you know, our industry used to be called the AEC industry, engineering, agriculture, sort of architecture, engineering, construction.
Right.
And we've added the O relatively recently. Mm-hmm. And it seems crazy to me that, you know, why has it taken us so long to think about the kind of the operational characteristics of the building as part of what we do and what we deliver?
Because we should start with the end in mind.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, at the very early stages of the design process, you know, and particularly with, you know, with new sort of aspects of legislation, particularly around the Building Safety Act, there's a requirement to be very specific about the attributes and characteristics and specifications of the building, you know, at that stage. And we're beginning to build some really interesting insights into, you know, what that final destination is going to be and what we're going to be delivering, and we should be tapping into that data at the very early stages. So I think a digital twin, you know, commences at conception. It evolves through construction. I think it adds maximum value at operation and handover. And ultimately, in the future, we're going to be looking at buildings which aren't just handed over and operated, but automated and optimized. And I think that's certainly our goal in TwinView, to get to that sort of level of sophistication and understanding within the built environment.
So one of the concepts that we talk about is the concept of twinning versus the concept of delivering twin-enabled solutions. In fact, that was the driver for us to create a platform where you could do that. What does it mean? So twinning literally means creating that digital map of whatever that asset or process is. So for example, if you take Google Maps as an example, Google Maps, if you did not have any application on Google Maps, if you didn't have navigation, if you didn't have traffic data, if you didn't have public transport information or places or bookings for hotels or whatever. So if you didn't have any of that, the underlying base layer is a digital map of things. And the digital map is great, but it's not as useful as the solutions that make use of the digital
map. Or intelligent.
Yeah, the intelligence that comes in. So for example, if you are going to travel from Dublin City, where we are in now, to say you want to drive to Cork, So you can choose. You can use the map to figure out what's the best route to take. It tells you, you know, what's where there's traffic and what's the public transport option. So all of that we would classify as a twin-enabled solution, whereas the base layer is the map. Same applies to buildings or infrastructure, where you create that representation, as Richard said, that physical representation of what it is, and that's the process of twinning. And twinning itself is evolving. So in the early stages of planning, the twin is going to be very light. It's going to be a very high level concept plan. And then there's going to be detailing that comes in as progressively. So depending on the use cases the client cares about, if the client has use cases around planning or the use cases around design or construction or operations, you can implement solutions with the information that's available at any given stage.
Right.
So you don't have to really boil the ocean in one go. You pick the problem that you want to solve within a specific stage of a life cycle and allow the twin to mature progressively so it can drive different use cases as the process evolves.
And with that process, what are some of the challenges that we face trying to bring this into reality?
I think if you look at the big picture here with any kind of emerging technology or transformative technology, it's only one small piece of the jigsaw puzzle. All right, very often, certainly from my perspective, the technology normally works. It's what you build around it in terms of people and process and understanding and vision to make that a reality and to make that successful. And I think that's probably going to be the biggest challenge that we face as we start to move to a digital twin-enabled world. The technology is not going to do it on its own. And there's a lot of hearts and minds and a lot of understanding that needs to be delivered into the industry and to the people that make this industry what it is.
And is that data going to be correct?
Exactly. As we just spoke about, you know, we're bringing together a combination of static and dynamic information. Static information within the build environment is often contained and embedded inside of the model.
Yeah. Iconic data, submittals, and stuff like that.
Exactly. But also, you know, when you think about the evolution of a BIM, you know, very often there are aspects of data that you're not going to be aware of ahead of time. So, you know, the BIM evolves organically. You might define the kinds of qualities and specifications of the assets that you're going to contain within the building, but at that point, you may not know anything about the procurement and supply chain and certainly nothing about the serial numbers of the components and so on. So, you know, it's important that kind of data comes together at the right time, that it evolves. And again, that involves people. So I think the whole process and people piece around this digital twin technology is going to be critical to its success.
So the way, you know, I agree with that. And one of the challenges that we would see, especially in the AEC space, is change management, yes. Right? So everybody is used to delivering their, whatever the deliverables are, in a certain way. And they have optimized their existing process and tools to deliver that with as much reduced risk as possible. When we introduce new expectations on the supply chain on a project, there are several upstream impacts that happen. For example, today BIM is used primarily for coordination and drawing production, right? No one really cares too much about the data. There's a little bit of awareness building, has been building over the last few years around data. But there is still not enough focus on producing good data. Digital twins is about the data. Yes, graphics helps. It gives some good context, but it's really about the data.
And you're trying to change that mindset that we had years ago where we've got these drawings that are falling apart. If we don't change that mindset, that mm-hmm. it's not just the model, another drawing, it's an intelligent model that's used for operating the building and then in turn the city.
Yeah. And the other problem is that many times you will find that the folks who are really involved in delivering the building, their focus around BIM is about delivering the building,
yep.
not about operating the building.
That's right.
And the folks who are concerned about operating the building are probably not anywhere in the scene.
Correct.
To even identify what assets they care about.
And they're more in that static environment versus look at the big picture, like you talked about earlier, yeah. was the smart cities.
Yes.
Don't think of a project as just a project. It's not. It's a dynamic part of the environment that we live in and interacts with it.
Exactly. It is to interact with all of these systems. It's end of the day, it's going to be a system of systems environment.
Yes. Right?
So you need to be able to, the building needs to interact with the grid. The grid needs to interact with the energy generation and everything else.
Yeah. What is the challenges that you see that I see is a lot of the facility management and the ownership are not driving this change for digital twins, and because they just don't understand the value that they can get from that.
Yeah, I think again, this is cultural.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's really interesting psychological discussion, really, about human beings. You know, we as human beings sort of create our identity around our purpose and what we do and our profession and so on. And sometimes if you see an emerging technology which is kind of asking you to change the way that you think or change the way that you do things, then, you know, I think psychologically sometimes that can become a threat. So I think, you know, there's a lot of work that we need to do. And again, I think this is characteristic of any kind of early adoption market. And I use the word early adoption, you know, with a slight caveat, because this is early adoption within the AECO space.
Right.
But this is technology that's worked in other industries for many, many years. You know, so automotive, as we've already spoken about, aerospace, manufacturing, have been working with digital twins very, very successfully for decades. So I think there's a lot to learn from other industries as well in terms of the way that they've traveled and the journey that they've taken. But yeah, I think we've just, again, it's all about people, right? It's very important that we bring these people with us and we help them understand the vision. And I think sort of, if I was to encapsulate that, as I think I mentioned it earlier on, you know, we build these buildings and facilities to perform a very specific purpose.
Yes.
And in my view, everybody that's involved in that delivery process, whether you're a designer, an architect, or you're involved in the construction process, or you're fitting out mechanical, electrical, equipment, you know, everybody should be focused on that final destination and the ultimate purpose of that building. And I don't think that's the case right now.
There's also a significant paradigm difference between how the other industries work and how the AEC works. If you take manufacturing, so take a product like the Boeing Dreamliner, or take a turbine which is made by GE, or a windmill made by Siemens or whoever. So you find that the party who is designing or developing the concept around a product is the same party who is doing the detailed design, doing the development of it, the construction of the manufacturing of it, the deployment of it, the maintenance of it. So it's fully integrated when it comes to some of these other segments. So take a Tesla car. I mean, Tesla is a great example of how digital twins are put to use. But Tesla makes everything end to end. Everybody works on one tool chain.
That's right.
The whole data strategy is well defined. It's a lot easier to deliver digital twins and creating value out of digital twins in some of those segments. But if you take the AEC, we have several stakeholders across several stages of a project. And ultimately, even in the ownership on the developer side, there are many different types of developers. You have a developer who develops and sells the property. There's a developer who develops and holds it and operates it. And then there's somebody who occupies it. So there are many, many variations on how assets are created and how assets are used within the built environment. And that has a material impact to how you define the goals of a digital twin and how you actually put it in practice.
Do you think that the industry, and this is a generic question, do you think that the industry is trying to achieve what manufacturing did years ago? Or do you think because of how dynamic it really is, could you ever really achieve that?
I think this is a really fascinating point that you make. From a personal perspective, back in the early days of getting involved in the sector, 1999, I've always thought that construction was a manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought that constructions would look at MRP and ERP systems that would come out of manufacturing. You know, this whole idea that, you know, resources and materials come together at a certain point in time. Fundamentally, it's the same. If you talk to the people who have been working within the construction sector for many, many years, they'll tell you absolutely not. Everything is unique. Everything is different. Everything is completely unique. You don't get more than...
Well, every building is literally a prototype, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. I think the reality is somewhere in between. All right? I think... There's some really exciting pieces of work being done, particularly across public sector, on trying to create sort of standard footprints and have a some kind of semi-manufactured,
like a modular
kind of approach,
plug and play.
Exactly. And I think that's important for many, many reasons. But I think there's a lot that we can learn from manufacturing, and I think that's going to be essential to the success of digital twins going forward.
Yeah, and I think it's also very important for the AC industry to recognize BIM is not digital twins.
Correct. There's, just like Revit is.
It's not BIM.
It's not BIM.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a process.
Exactly. And BIM is a process that generates a great outcome if it is focused upon the right way.
Yeah.
And that can be a fantastic data source for a digital twin. But many times you hear conversations that kind of get wrapped around, we're doing BIM already, and that must be a digital twin. It's a digital map, really. If you go back to the same analogy.
It doesn't have all the intelligence.
It doesn't have the intelligence. It doesn't have the dynamic performance. It doesn't have the ability to do simulations. It doesn't have the ability to do analytics and drive operational outcomes, or even outcomes within any of those phases of the life cycle of an asset. So I think that recognition is important. And every stakeholder in the industry would also need to figure out how they can make use of digital twin technology in their own context.
Correct.
If I'm a designer, how can I make use of digital twin technology? If I'm a contractor, if I'm an owner or a planner, everybody has a set of use cases that can be delivered through the use of data that they produce and bringing it into an environment in an IT-centric way or a data-centric way and drive those outcomes.
Yeah, and I think that the big focus on digital twins in that nature is trying to take that intelligence and just when to install that intelligence, make sure that it's right. But who is the key partners at those different stages to input that data? Because it's time intensive. It's kind of like 4D BIM. Everybody wants to do it and they see there's a benefit there, but there's a lot of upfront work that has to go into play.
Mm-hmm.
How is that changing? How do we get the data into something that would then be used for owner maintenance?
Well, if I may, I think the industry needs to recognize that data is not an afterthought.
Correct.
Right? Data is the way they should be driving the process. And therein lies the problem, because many times the conversations are, how do I get data into this models? I mean, well, you should have had the data, started with the data in the first place.
Right.
I think that's a paradigm shift that needs to happen.
And is that driven by the design or is that driven by the vendor?
I think ultimately it's, you know, if you look at some of the emerging kind of processes and protocols that have been built around the Building Safety Act, I think it's ultimately the responsibility of the asset owner, right? It's for the asset owner to define the success criteria with regards to the level of detail of data, how it's going to be applied into the project, you know, what the ambition is for that particular facility. And for that to, you know, be the North Star and the final destination that everybody's looking at, you know, from concept all the way through to delivery. But yeah, it's an interesting challenge, and I would again 100% agree of, you know, that data shouldn't be an afterthought.
Yeah, I also think it is runs both ways. You need the asset developer, the owner, the occupier, whoever is driving the development, to be very clear about expectations to the supply chain. And to be frank, I think nobody in the industry is going to do anything more than their contractual obligation. I mean, let's not even try.
Because the margins are so low. Yeah,
margins are low. There's tight schedules and everything else. No one's going to, if you don't plan for it, you're not going to get it. Right? It's as simple as that. So the owners, the developers need to be aware of what they want to get out of a digital process
and
define it and specify it and pay for it, right? In the end, somebody has to pay for the work.
And drive it.
And drive it. It also goes the other way, which is the designers and contractors and operators of assets, facility managers, they need to recognize how to use that data and incorporate that within their own workflows to improve their own outcomes. And then it's a perfect marriage. There's a client who asks for it, pays for it, and then there's a supply chain doing it and using that data to drive their own business outcomes. So that's the nirvana state that you want to get to.
Yeah, and you see that a lot with very high technology-based companies, like data centers and hospitals and anything that revolves around complex systems. You're mm-hmm. starting to see that development.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Much more so than your typical
commercial office.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they don't see the benefit yet when they're trying to still develop out some of these complex processes.
Yeah, projects. And I would add, I think, just to continue this point, because I think it's a very important one, you know, to consider the drivers that are helping the industry think about this, because this is being driven from need, I think. And, you know, those drivers are very distinct and I think, you know, clearly identifiable. You know, if you think about, you know, the consequences of Grenfell and what happened and the Building Safety Act, you know, this is essentially about maintaining compatibility with original design throughout the lifetime of the building. Yeah, and that's important. You know, even this week, you know, we've had news about, Rax Concrete and you know, the statements that are coming out of the government in terms of we don't really know what schools have this component contained within them. And that seems crazy to me, right? You know, where else in life do we happily consume something that we don't understand, when we don't understand what's inside of it, what's within it? Mm-hmm. I think that's a massive pressure that we have to address and a challenge that we have to address. And I would say there are others, you know, certainly net zero, energy scarcity, you know, are pressures that we can't ignore anymore. So it gives me a lot of hope that, you know, I've been in this industry for a while. Technology change is often a slow, sometimes painful process, takes a long time. But I think that where we are today, the pressures for change are so significant that it'll create that catalyst that allow it to happen. And the one other thing that I would say on that, you know, 25 years in the industry, I think we've got a new generation of engineers and middle management coming into play now, who expect nothing else than, you know, the technology that gives them the answers when they need it. So I think those kind of, you know, generational change, technology changes, and significant global pressures, I think will be the catalyst that allow digital twins to, you know, transform this industry perhaps a lot more quickly than we've seen in the past with other technology changes.
Yeah, it goes back to the point of the different industries that kind of led the world, right? You had farming and then anything to do with water, and then it was everything to do with shelter. How did we get behind the two that were older than us in terms of this development of technology and how we run these different cities and different environments? You know, what led to that change that, you know, with farming where, you know, they have technology that helps grow plants faster and all these different things. But for some reason, we're still stuck in the past.
I would go back to the problem of contracting structures in this industry, right? Take farming. I mean, if you are a individual farmer or if you are a corporation running large farms, either ways, you are doing everything end to end until you get your sell your product and receive the money for it, right? From the time you till the land.
So it's so much more streamlined.
So it's all in one hand.
Yeah.
And I think that's the single biggest problem we have. And even if you consider, ignore digital twins for a minute, if you talk about waste as an issue in construction, same issue.
Yeah, we're one of the biggest in the world.
Yeah. So I think it is a structural problem that we have, which has limited us. How are we going to change it? I think there have been some interesting models like IPD that have been explored.
To bring the full
integrated approach to project delivery, getting everybody to collaborate rather than protect their own sort of individual interests in the equation. I think those sort of contracting models and for sure industrialized construction is going to be the driver for that change.
Do you think that it will be mass accepted?
Well, it'll take a time. It'll take its time because there is a certain way of doing business and changing that. And even IPD, even though it came up with quite a lot of hope in the U.S. initially, I've not seen too much. Have you? Have you seen much happening there?
Mainly in the north.
Yeah.
South, it's kind of stayed with the cement risk and design build. And a lot of the way that the South looks at it in the U.S. is that, you know, IPD came out of design build. And in some respects it did, but it was trying to take all the pros of all the different contract types and try to eliminate some of the cons.
Right.
What are, going back to that digital twin idea, what are both of your companies doing to kind of lead the charge? We talked earlier today that you're different in the way that you're addressing this conversation.
Yeah, and you know, as I said, we are laser focused on buildings and facilities. You know, my company, TwinView, was a technology company, was born out of an architect practice, which anchors us completely in that particular space. And you know, what we are trying to do at this point is like in any kind of early adopter market, it's really about educating the market of the value of this technology, spreading the word, trying to identify, you know, the best places to land and expand, finding those value propositions that really stick and give some immediate return so that we can get people, you know, onto the digital twin journey in a way that means something for them. And, you know, allow them to sort of, you know, understand the art of the possible and to continue that journey with us. So right now it's classic early adopter territory for me. It's a place I very much like working within. As we've said earlier on, you know, if you ask five different people what a digital twin is, you're probably going to get five slightly different answers, all of which are probably correct from the context of the person answering the question, right?
Yeah.
But I think it's all about sort of, you know, spreading the word, educating the market, and perhaps look into the other industries that have already gone through this digital transformation. You know, again, the interesting thing about construction and AECO, it's always been called the sleeping giant, right? I think the Egan report in 98 sort of described it as a sleeping giant. You know, it's the most significant industry on the planet, but it has the most dissatisfied customers and it has the least effective use of data and information.
And a lot of that has to do with inefficiencies.
Yeah, I think. And just the culture and, you know, of that particular industry, it was always considered to be kind of a dirty, manual kind of, you know, industry, but that's changing significantly. So yeah, it's all about kind of educating the market and trying to find the spots that have maximum value to land and expand and bring awareness to the industry.
So our strategy has been founded on a few pillars. The first is that digital twins are really going to be delivered through a consultative approach. Right? It's not a product that you can simply drop into a customer's office. It needs to be delivered through an understanding of the use cases of the customer, how those use cases will be delivered, what's their existing ecosystem, their technology and tools that they use, how do you integrate. So there is that. The first bit for us is the recognition that digital twins are going to be a consultatively delivered solution that is bespoke to that particular customer. In a way, in the same way a building is built, more or less, right? And even operated. The second pillar of our strategy is that digital twins are more than one thing. And as Richard also was saying there, it really depends on what industry, what segment, what stage in the life cycle, what problem do you want to solve, which means you want to be able to create those customized solutions rapidly.
Right.
So keeping, and there are others, and these are the two primary sort of considerations for us. And that led us to build a platform thinking. So we built what is now the industry's first composable platform for creating digital twin solutions. It's called TwinIt. It was in development by Invicara over the last 7 to 8 years. And earlier this year in May, we announced it as available for general use. So our go-to-market here is really about making a platform available to industry practitioners who know what problem to solve, but they're not necessarily software companies, not all of them at least. How do we make it easy for them to create these solutions rapidly? So it's a kit of parts, highly configurable. So it's what we call unopinionated technology. So you can, the application built by somebody to deliver a solve a problem, defines the data model, defines the data pipelines, defines the business logic, defines the permission models, and they create the solution that their client wants very, very quickly. So that's our play in the digital twin space.
Yeah, and then one of the things that you'll see with digital twins too in talking with both of your companies is there's a misconception about digital twins and visual twins, mm-hmm. in that term. So you got the reality capture piece, where a lot of people think that's a digital twin.
Absolutely.
And there's a whole dialogue that's breaking down there that, yeah, that's data that comes into the digital twin, mm-hmm. to assist, right. it, but it's not the full, yeah. digital twin.
No, I think we've talked about this kind of combination of static and dynamic data, right?
Yes.
You know, the visual for me is 100% static data, right? It's not changing minute to minute, hour to hour.
It's unless it's a construction camera.
Yeah.
Then it could be potentially. But then it's for only a short period of time.
That's a really, really important point that you make. All,
yeah.
right. So during the construction phase and design phase, for sure, there are dynamics.
Yes.
But again, with our laser focus on building facilities, at the point of handover,
yes.
that facility you're building is a relatively static entity.
It is.
You know, in years to come, it may change and evolve. Maybe not even years. You know, sometimes you get an open plan office space that's subdivided into different offices, or you get an extension. So it's got the capability to change, and a digital twin has to change with it. And I think that's very important. But yeah, that's it's quite interesting. I think it's quite fascinating as well. You know, you certainly get a lot of drone based point cloud acquisition companies who will promote and market their solutions as digital twins.
And it's just fundamentally not the right term.
Fundamentally, it's not the right term. I agree. You know,
it's,
if you ask yourself,
it's the same conversation around Revit is not BIM and BIM is not, it's a process.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think, you know, the check on that is there a real time digital connection between the physical entity that you're twinning and the digital entity that you're creating.
Exactly.
And if there isn't a digital connection, a real-time digital connection, then it's 100% not anywhere near a digital twin. And of course, you've got this concept of shadows and you've got this concept of models now, which adds perhaps a little bit more complexity to the whole piece. And, you know, and sometimes that's a little bit counterproductive, I think, when you get all these kind of slight variations on the theme. Certainly the shadows and the twin pieces is kind of interesting.
Well, they see the data and they think that the data is making it a digital twin. Now, the digital twin occurs as you build that out and then you use it for that final process, mm-hmm. of what's that end goal.
And optimize that process.
And optimize,
right?
It, yes.
So that's the key. So getting the real-time performance data, doing something with it, and taking actions to improve the outcomes, and again, validating that and seeing what next do we need to do. So if you go to get to net zero, it's not a single step process. It's going to be an iterative process over time.
Yes.
And talking about net zero, I think that's going to be one of the biggest drivers for digital twins in the built environment.
And that's not just looking at a static situation of a project. That's looking at the bigger picture,
yeah.
the smart cities.
Yeah. And the operational life cycle of that asset, and how do I continually improve the energy performance of that asset, diminishing the carbon load over time.
And then how do you do that across
exactly.
the city?
Yep. And that's still a service-led opportunity for somebody who understands how buildings work and how do I use digital twin technology to drive those outcomes.
Yeah, I, the biggest challenge that I see on that front from like a city environment is really not per se maybe from the owner side, because I think that is a challenge. But will the design kind of give access, not just to their project, but like to the community at large to make their city better? Because now you're sharing not just the design of your project that you're contractually agreed to with an owner and a contractor. You're sharing that information out of how you designed this project with the mass audience.
Yes. And I think, you know, the other piece to all of this, we talked about this kind of digital connection. I think it's important as well to understand that, you know, digital twin in terms of its paradigm fundamentally predicated on this kind of static and dynamic data, but it also is going to be used in a lot of other technology services as part of that, right? And you know, you start to hear terms like ontology being spoken about, you know, and sort of the cause and effect and the interconnectivity between systems within the building or between buildings or between cities even. You know, physics, fundamental physics is an important part of a digital twin, because you take this data and you need to apply the right kind of algorithms and knowledge to interpret it and use it in a way that gives you the right kind of information and outcomes so you can make some kind of interventions. You know, it's about the data, static and dynamic data, but it's also very much about the interpretation, and the interpretation of that data is going to be specific on the kind of outcome that you're trying to achieve, I think. So there's lots of moving parts. I think for us, taking this kind of concept to market, I think it's also quite important for us not to over-engineer the concepts, because at this stage, we really need people to understand the fundamental value proposition that we're trying to deliver here. So it's a delicate balancing act, I think, for both our companies here in terms of, you know, delivering value.
And another important consideration is to also keep in mind that digital twins are ultimately going to be a network of connected systems and connected tools, and it's probably not going to be all coming from one hand. So the idea of being able to use expert systems, so for example, you may have an expert system that does agent-based simulation, something else does physics-based simulation, something else does statistical models, for so on. So a digital twin solution needs to have the ability to bring data together, make the data available to different presumers of data, as in applications that produce data and consume data and interact with each other. So that's the kind of ecosystem that's going to drive the success of this industry.
In the final comments and conclusion to this hour, I want to get both of your final opinions on where do we go from here?
That's quite a loaded question.
It is.
I think we aspire to deliver a better industry. We continue to, you know, evangelize the technology and the value proposition, educate the market, deliver some tangible examples of how this technology can transform the environment in which it's being deployed, and we build, you know, piece by piece, and ultimately, in the words of Geoffrey Moore, cross that chasm, and digital twin become mass market technology that's well established and well understood, as it has done in other industries. It's going to be a long journey. I think it's going to be an exciting one, and it's certainly a worthwhile and noble one for us.
For the industry, if the question is a bit broader around what should the industry do as the next step, I think every industry practitioner should take a hard look and assess what digital twins mean to their business and figure out how they want to participate in the digital twin economy. And the digital twin economy is not insignificant. It's Gartner projects it to be $130 billion business by 2030, yeah, and getting to 180 by in the next 3 years thereafter. So there's a huge, huge opportunity that we would be, as a practitioner, if I were to ignore this space, I would be making a huge mistake. So the first thing, figure out what digital twins mean to you, and then figure out how do I translate that into a business model, a business offering, and find the technologies to realize it. I think that's the path that's going to get the industry moving forward for everybody.
And then how do you change that mindset as it's being delivered and throughout the process for the client and for, let's say, the person that's operating the pieces of equipment? How do you bring them along in that process?
That's an interesting question. It's all about value ultimately. It's all about value and transformation and you know, maximizing performance and optimizing, you know, operations. Again, certainly within the framework of a building from my perspective. I think the people who are instrumental in making this work and the people who are instrumental in driving this technology, you need to have clear understanding and visibility of value. They need to understand that there is a much better world out there, and ultimately it's going to, you know, deliver more purposeful buildings that are far more efficient. So it's all about value. I think we're not going to do any of this unless it delivers some tangible value and some tangible change in the industry, and it has the capability to do that for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think the industry leaders around who are bringing the technology, bringing the solutions, need to build those showcases, need to build those case studies and encourage everybody to recognize that's the real thing. However, I would be shy of saying that you can push people along this journey yourself. You can't. I mean, everybody needs to pick up the mantle themselves and figure out what they need to do. There is an incentive. There's a lot of money out there.
Right.
So in the world is driven by commerce, and if you want to participate in it, you've got to do something about it.
And it can't be just the high end, clients that are wanting it, like data centers and stuff like that. It needs to be a mass.
Exactly.
Expense. Yeah. I want to thank you both for joining this hour of the podcast. Thank you all for this hour, and we'll see you after lunch.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been great to be here. Very enjoyable. Yeah. Thank you,
Richard.
Great. Enjoyed that.
Thank you.